wrote the 1979 Junior Devotional, and they won't let me write another one. You're allowed one junior and one senior, and I'm working on a senior right now. I got a call the other day, by the way. Kind of thrilled me. You see, I prepared that junior devotional, Catch the Bright Dawn, for the 79 reading for our own juniors. It took me 3.5 years to cover the Bible from Genesis to Revelation in a running narrative. And I got a call the other day from a non-Adventist lady who said she got a hold of the book, and she and some of her neighbors decided to go through that book. So they all bought the book, and they sit down, and they study the Bible through the eyes of a junior. Since it was written for a 12-year-old level, it appeals to a lot of the non-Adventist folk. That's about the reading level in the Bible that they are, and they don't like heavy theological terms, and it may teach us something about reaching people. I'm into the new book, about halfway through now. That was a spin-off from a week of prayer that I developed on choices people have made in the Bible. John, Judas, various people. And from that week of prayer, it began to expand, and it takes up 365 days. And I discovered something very interesting so far as I get into this, that every human emotion, practically every, well, I haven't run across any situation that somehow the principle is there in the Bible. I recommend highly that you take a Bible character and discover how they reacted and how God spoke to them. It's a good way to study the Bible. We have a tendency, by the way, to study the Scriptures in a topical fashion. But taking Bible characters, make them live. Remember, they lived and breathed, and they sweated and they toiled like anyone else. And God spoke to them, and they had to make decisions. The most fearful threatening ever addressed to mortals is contained in the third angel's message. There must be a terrible sin which calls down the wrath of God unmingled with mercy. It must be something awful. You can look from Genesis to Revelation and you won't find any words like these. Nothing. Nothing to compare with. Let's read it tonight. Revelation 14, beginning with the 9th verse through the 11th. And we'll stop there tonight. Not because that concludes the third angel's message, but because that's as far as we can go in this length of time. Tomorrow night and Saturday night, we will conclude with the 12th verse, which is part of the third angel's message. And the third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, "If any man worship the beast in his image, and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation. And he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment ascendeth up forever and ever, and they have no rest day nor night, who worship the beast and his image, and whosoever receiveth the mark of his name." I wonder what the early pioneers thought when they read those words for the first time and really delved into it. So easy, you know, to hastily read the Scriptures. But God is trying to get people's attention. serious matter. And men are not to be left in darkness. A warning is to be given before God's judgments are inflicted on us so they can escape. No one has received the mark of the beast yet. Now, many people, as you've heard me mention before, many people are proclaiming the second coming. They're talking about Jesus coming. But they are misrepresenting the actual event. If you listen carefully to the words spoken about the second coming of Christ, there will be a little parenthetical remark, well, I'll see you in the rapture or something like that. There really, in their theology, is a third coming, a second chance. God has commissioned us to give this final warning. The masses of people are totally unprepared for Christ's return. They see things happening. You can go to any person on the street, in any city, practically. Just try it. And you'll get their attention about things happening, events transpiring about them. And they see something ominous taking place, and they sense that there could be a total collapse, and they're frightened. But they don't know what's happening. They don't understand the great prophecies. God is waiting for a people who will show him some affection and devotion and reverence. How we all respond to spontaneous affection. Did you ever just tell God, I love you? I hope you learn that early. I hope your prayers can come to the place where they're not asking for something all the time. I hope you can mature. Because as we come into this frightful period of Earth's history, you will need a kind of relationship with God that is so warm and affectionate, so trusting, that as you see everything collapse about you, you know that He will be there in the shadows. Now, many people of the past, many Christians of the past, honestly kept Sunday as Sabbath. And God accepted their sincerity of purpose and their integrity before Him. Sometimes people are sincere. I knew of a sincere pilot flying a 707 plane down here, coming into Portland International Airport. He came down the Columbia River. It was a chartered plane, loaded, coming from the east, and he heard, take the runway at the international airport, and he accepted that command from the tower. But as he came down the Columbia River, he looked down there, and he saw a runway. It happened to be Troutdale. Troutdale is not a big airport. It's just in front of the international airport. So sincerely, he put the flaps down, lowered his wheels, and he came into Troutdale, and he used up all the runway clear down to the cabbage field. And they ended in the mud, and they had to dismantle the plane. No one was hurt. He lost his license, but he was sincere. Of course, even if he hadn't, he would have never had a repeat performance. But he was sincerely wrong. My own boyhood, we kept Sunday, I think, a little stricter than some Adventists keep Sabbath. We could not attend certain functions. There were certain restrictions. Sunday was the Lord's Day. And I was sincerely wrong. And then I realized, as I told you Friday night, what this message meant to me personally. The God of creation. You know, you can't change a birthday. the birthday of the world. And every week, like a very special date, you meet with God. But when Sunday worship shall be enforced by law, and the world shall be enlightened concerning the obligation of the true Sabbath, then whoever shall transgress the command of God to obey a precept which has no higher authority than that of Rome will thereby honor popery above God, and he is paying homage to Rome and the power which enforced it. And he's worshiping the beast and his image. And that hour and that time is upon us. The role of the United States in this final drama is significant. Revelation 13:15, it states this country has a power to give life under the image of the beast. And with the thrust, the current mentality of the evangelicals, they will seek the strong arm of the state to enforce what they considered the moral obligation. When Sunday law appears, it will come from the right, not from the left. And that will give life to this. It will be the Protestants in the United States that will be the foremost actors. In the old country, it will be Rome. Now, today, it is easy to collect all sorts of current stories and news features. I could load it up the desk here, load up the desk with it. That would indicate very forcefully that prophecy is being fulfilled right before our eyes. It's not hard. In fact, as you can pick up any news magazine, you can pick up any newspaper, you can listen to the news at night, and every time, every day, it's piling up. Sometime you should just get a little collective, accumulated picture of what's really happening. Within the last 10 years, I don't know whether you've even noticed what's happening to the popularity of the papacy alone. Have you? I mean, as a pope blows his nose, we've got some news event. And I told someone the other night, John Knox would roll over in his grave if he knew that the pope had come to his country of Scotland. All the world, a wonder after the beast. No, it's easy to collect these stories. And while it is true, God is waiting for a people to reflect his image, to come into line, to be settled intellectually and spiritually into the truth about his character. There is every indication the ungodly forces are developing their characters too, at a rapid rate. At a very rapid rate. And if God did not come soon in the flaming eastern sky, he would have to resurrect Sodom and Gomorrah and apologize. Sick. Perversion. In fact, there's an entire group of families in Los Angeles alone who have bumper stickers that encourage incest. Do it before 8, before it's too late. And you think that the world is not getting sick to the place where even the children have no concept and not even ability to think properly, even if they do get to the age of accountability. So there is a character development, the righteous and the wicked. And that's what it really boils down to. Rebellion or loyalty to God. That's really what it is. There's only two classes of people. And we're coming down to the wire. Now the reaction from the religious, political, right-wing elements already are driving hard to correct the permissive left that we had in the 60s and the early 70s. And you get this action and reaction. The law and order cry, a hue and cry, will seem conclusive. It will carry the urge to persecute. There's more and more indication of repeating what happened when Hitler walked into Germany in 1933. All they needed was a scapegoat, and they got it, the Jews. A time was coming when no man can buy or sell unless they cooperate with the state, and we will become the Jews in that sense. And all the crime and all the violence and all the problems will be due to the fact that the Lord's Day is not being kept properly. I wish I'd saved a little pamphlet that came out in 1974 in the height of that energy crisis. Remember when we had those long lines of cars to get gas? It was written by a Dutch Reformed minister, a very, very small voice. But I said, we'll see that again, and we'll hear that voice again. And in his pamphlet, came to my desk when I was at the General Conference, he said, all of these problems, the crisis that we're in now, is due to the fact that we're not keeping the Lord's Day, Sunday. But he said more than that. Those who keep another day must be dealt with. When you take away the people's bread and circuses, as it was in the days of the fall of the Roman Empire, and the economy begins to fold in on itself, and that is happening. And you take away the bread and circuses, it's amazing what kind of mentality you get. History will be repeated. It's happened before. Revelation 13:17, and that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. I say to you tonight, it will be seemingly be the easiest and most sensible and most logical thing in all the world to receive the mark of the beast. It'll be very, very logical to conform to the power of the state. It isn't something someone says, well, I'll never receive it. No, don't say that. The arguments will seemingly stand up under some kind of a scrutiny on the surface. While it is not a visible mark, it will be known by all heaven. And it can be received, according to the scriptures, in the forehead or in the hand, either by conviction or by convenience. Most people will receive the mark of the beast in the hand. Most. Now, symbolic of the seat of a man's intelligence right here in the frontal lobes of the brain. You can have part of your brain blown away and you can lose your motor mechanism or your eyesight or your hearing or whatever, or your memory. But if the frontal lobes are gone, you are a vegetable. It is there. It is there in the frontal part of your brain that you make a choice. That is where the seal of God is placed. That is where God reaches you and reaches me, through the central nervous system where we make a choice. It's the reason why the devil keeps a steady bombardment, especially with the youth, to get them in booze or drugs or whatever to block out this so they can't make a decision properly. Some will deliberately choose to serve a man-made Sabbath in spite of every evidence to the contrary. But those who receive it in the hand will comply with the powers that be rather than lose their jobs. Jobs will be so scarce, you see. And the argument will be, I have to support my family. I have to support my family. And they will have scriptural proof for that. A person must support the family. It'll seem conclusive. What God is saying, do you trust me enough? Do you care enough? Do you know that I can take care of you? Do you understand what the psalmist is saying, that he had never seen anyone begging bread to trust him? It will come down to this. Satan will see to it. It is his last pitch. It is his last effort to drive a wedge. His last effort to bring in everybody into the rebellion that he's in. Now today Satan is using a softening and subduing technique. to create a climate for exchanging eternal values for human devisings. Very similar to something that happened in June 1940. Some of you weren't around. I can remember it. You know, after World War I, the French said, that'll never happen again. Their country was overrun by the Germans. So they went, instead of on the attack, as in World War I, they decided to build a large line, a fortress called a Maginot Line. And they went down 6 floors deep in concrete bunkers and reinforced steel, concrete. They had an entire city below the surface along the French border facing the Germans. And they had gun placements facing towards the east, toward the German border. And they said, in a boasting way, whoever starts the next one will get hurt. They had hospitals, they had pharmacies, they had air conditioning, they had everything below ground. They could put their entire army down there. June 1940. The Germans came up to the Maginot Line. The French went underground like moles. The Germans never fired a shot. Not one shot was fired. They sent across balloons instead. Balloons? Yes, balloons. With little, neat little messages tied to them. And of course, some of the lookouts would grab the messages and bring them down and they'd look at them. Written in neat French. What are you Frenchmen doing down in the ground? Maybe your wives and sweethearts are going out with the British. Do you like it down there? Don't you like the fresh air and the sunshine? That went on day after day. And then they brought in the loudspeakers and the Germans kept up the steady barrage. Why are you down in your holes? We don't want to fight. Maybe, and again, maybe your wives and sweethearts are out with somebody else. You Frenchmen, remember that. It was called the phony war, but it wasn't phony. The Germans knew precisely what they were doing. When the time came for Hitler to make his end run around to the Ardennes Forest, the Maginot Line fell without firing one shot by demoralized men who had been so weakened by the propaganda. Now, prophecy tells us of what the United States will do. It will lead out. The whole world will be brought to a crisis decision. And this softening technique is being hammered away now. It is not difficult to understand how this can happen. How the United States could lead out and no one say anything. Hardly any voice being raised. Because today mass media has enabled man to communicate both good and bad. And the devil understands the simple principle of the mind that by beholding we become changed. He knows mass media well. He has studied propaganda well. So he keeps up a steady bombardment of books and magazines and television programs and newspapers and radio and movies. They've blanketed the earth like a bad London fog that anything goes, with the idea that anything goes. Any kind of entertainment, any sentiment, any depravity of the human mind, that anything goes. And comedians and comics and commentators follow the direction of this mastermind of evil. And destroying everything that's sacred and pure. From marriage and morals, it's all the same. Man is a law unto himself. Now when I took communications at Boston University and delved into propaganda techniques, there was one basic rule, one simple, simple rule. You repeat a lie often enough, and keep it up and keep it up. And after a while, you'll believe it. Now, once the enemy has projected the concept that anything related to the law of God is legalistic, then it is no great trick to manipulate the mind into nodding approval of all sin. And when the real issue comes about Sunday, it will be easy for the people to accept the popular idea. A lot of people have made fun of the book Great Controversy, especially the liberal left in our church. Said it was not applicable for today. 19th century stuff. I say to you, if you haven't read it lately, especially the last 12 chapters or so, I suggest you get into it again. Just for a little devotional. Along with the scriptures, following through in the prophecies. It'll give you a new experience, by the way. And you'll discover that it almost leaps out at you as front page news. Does this sound like it's current? Page 588 and 9. The line of distinction between professed Christians and the ungodly is now hardly distinguishable. Church members love what the world loves and are ready to join with them, and Satan determines to unite them in one body and thus strengthens his cause by sweeping all into the ranks of spiritualism. Now don't wring your hands and say, what's happening to our church? I'll tell you what's happening. We're into the end time experience. And Satan is making his last effort. Papists, Protestants, and worldlings will alike accept this form of godliness without the power, and they will see in this union a grand movement for the conversion of the world and the ushering in of the long-expected millennium. So when you see a breakdown, and by the way, the Seventh-day Adventist Church suffers from every affliction that's in the world, from incest to you name it. I have to deal with the same kind of problems that I read in the front page news. So don't think we're kind of isolated off somewhere. And I was telling Brother Garland, I can remember Dr. Chalmers saying that he went down to Australia, and he said, yes, we're the head, not the tail. He said, in one province down there, we have the highest divorce rate of anybody, Catholic, Protestant, anybody. We're the head, not the tail. The line of distinction between professed Christians and the ungodly is now hardly distinguishable. I'm dealing with a case right now where a father has committed incest with all five of his daughters. And yet he stood up in Sabbath school and taught, and it was a local elder. And that's not an isolated case. We're in the last moment of time. And you and I are making up our minds. And the softening technique is really another term for the age-old diversion trick Satan has used so successfully in mankind. Remember I told you the other night, I really was quoting from page 488 in that chapter on spiritualism, I believe. Satan invents unnumbered schemes to occupy our minds. He knows that with him, everything depends on diverting the minds from Jesus and his truth. You ever wonder why we can't seem to settle any wars? Why we've had so many since World War II? Why we just keep putting out one brush fire after the other? If it isn't the Falkland crisis, it's Beirut, it's something else. And once that's settled, something else pops up. These are diversion tactics. It is his object, speaking of Satan, to incite the nations to war against one another, for he can thus divert the minds of the people from the work of preparing to stand on the day of God. That's what it's all about. It's not because somebody is mad at somebody else, because some little piece of an isolated island where the sheep herders were is so important. It's a diversion tactic. We get caught up in it. People are unprepared. What about political corruption in high places? Did Ellen White ever write about that? did she ever write about it? It was almost as if she had an inside scoop in the Washington Post. Did you ever read Testimonies to Ministers? Listen, that's a book everybody ought to have. Don't let it fool you. Don't let the name fool you, Testimonies to Ministers. Don't let that name fool you. Pick it up. Read it. Men in high places are giving evidence that their thoughts are evil continually. Many are seeking after riches and scruple not to add to their wealth through fraudulent transactions. The Lord is permitting these men to expose one another in their evil deeds. Some of their iniquitous practices are being laid bare open before the world, that thinking men will still have a desire in their hearts to be honest and just with their fellow men, and may understand why God is beginning to send His judgments on the earth. Another place in Great Controversy 592, political corruption is destroying love of justice and regard for truth, and even in free America, rulers and legislators, in order to secure public favor, will yield to the popular demand for a law enforcing Sunday observance. That is what's behind the political corruption. It's a stage being set for something down the road apiece. You must remember, Satan is a keen planner. He doesn't come at people all at once. He lays the groundwork well because he wants to be on the winning side. And if he can't be on the winning side, he'll take as many people as he can with him. It sort of reminds me of the time a few years ago when Alcatraz was still being operated as a federal penitentiary. And some men escaped from their cell block. Now, there was no way to get off that rock. No way. But they could get out of the cell block and go into another area. And they got some guns, and were able to hold out in that one area. And in their desperation, when they knew they could not escape or could not win, they began killing as many as they could. That was the mentality, and that's the kind of an enemy you face. If he can't make it, he's going to take as many as he can with him. Now, the process of shaping minds to accept the mark of the beast is a life and death matter. It's not something to take it or leave it. Everything is at stake now. The third angel's message is to be regarded as the highest importance. And you must remember that Satan has control of every mind that is not under the decided control of Jesus. I often like to shake up young people when they tell me that they are free to do what they want to do. Do my own thing. No, you're not. You're not free. You're only free in Jesus. The only freedom you know is in submission to His will, because you will be controlled by your own pride and passions. Just try stop doing some things. Oh, I tell you, I wish you could see the looks on the young people's faces when I face them up to that they're not free. They think they are. That cigarette dangling out your mouth, you can't give it up if you wanted to. Satan has you under his control. Unless you are under the decided control of Jesus, you will do the enemy's bidding in the end. And none but those who have fortified the mind with the truths of the Bible will stand through the last great conflict. To every person will come the searching test, shall I obey God rather than men? No, I'm not trying to stand up here tonight and frighten you. That's not my purpose. I just want to alert you to where we are, and I want you to get back into the Word. I want you to get your priorities straightened around so that you will say, I don't care how many appointments I may have. I must spend time with the Word of God under any circumstances. Did you ever visit that little place called Sunnyside in Australia? I was there in 1970, and something really touched my heart as I went into the little house, the little dwelling where Ellen White stayed for almost a decade. And there was a little room. It looked like a closet, but it wasn't a closet. And there was a little, there was a chair, not a little chair, but there was a chair. It looked like one of these old rockers, with a kind of a leather covering on it. And I said, what was this for? It looks strange to see this chair in this room all alone, nothing else there. And the guide said this was her prayer room. She went into that room and shut the door. And he says, I don't care. The Queen of England sat out there waiting. She had an appointment with the King of the Universe. She prayed. And out of that closet came such books as Mount of Blessing and Christ Object Lessons and some of the great things that were a part, would have been part of Desire of Ages, would make it too big. And I stood there, and tears came to my cheek as we don't appreciate the gift and the leading of this woman who showed us the way to Jesus. Do you have a closet? Do you have a place? Do you have a time? Do you have an appointment with the King of the Universe? If you don't, I assure you, you're going to be rattled. You're going to be shaken. You're going to have your little appointment book all packed tight with appointments that you have to go, good things to do. And the devil will see to it that there are a lot of good things. He doesn't come at Adventists with bad things. He comes with good things. And he says, well, you have to be here, and you have to be here, and you have to be here. And when just as soon as you finish that one, you must be over there. Anything but meeting with God. Anything. Now, you may have to do like old brother R.R. Beach used to do. He used to take out his little black book, and he'd say, no, I'm sorry, brethren, but I've got an appointment. They didn't know what it was, but what he wrote down was family. You could put down Jesus. I've got an appointment. I'm sorry, I can't make that appointment. I can't be there. That's a good idea. I think it's great, but I can't be there. I've got an appointment. And until you have your priorities straightened around, and I have my priorities straightened around, we're going to get awfully frightened, and we're going to do a lot of nail biting as we get to the end. So this is what I'm urging tonight. When we're totally committed to Christ, then His Spirit can use us mightily in proclaiming the final warning. Your value of the Sabbath today will determine the outcome of the conflict tomorrow. And you will be tomorrow what you're becoming today. I'm going to repeat that. You will be tomorrow what you're becoming today. Several years ago, I walked into a servicemen's center. And here were some GIs. I think they were playing the Adventist pool. Is that Karam's? I guess it says a vegetarian pool on Sabbath. And the chaplain was very embarrassed because I was a visitor. And he says, man, put it away. And he was embarrassed. His face was red. And I thought, do you have to be watched? Do you really have to be watched? A lot of people, you know, can gain the victory when somebody's watching them. Oh, I've seen many a young person gain the victory when the dean walks in, somebody's telling a dirty story, and suddenly they gain the victory. Oh, yes. Do you have to be watched? Or is there a relationship with God that you love Him so much that you wouldn't? You don't have to have some surveillance. You see, a trust is so wonderful. It's a wonderful thing. And even though you're single, I'm going to use something about a married life. Do you mind? My wife and I have been, we're thousands of miles apart many times. But I trust her, and she trusts me. You don't have to be watched. You don't have to be watched. And that's the kind of relationship that God wants with His people. The Sabbath will be the great test of loyalty. It is this point especially controverted. When the final test shall be brought to bear upon men, then the line of distinction between those who serve God and those who serve Him not will be made over the Sabbath. It isn't that the Sabbath is any more important than any of the other commandments, but here's where, as we say, the rubber meets the road. This is where the test will come. And the sanctification of the Spirit will signalize the difference between those who have the seal of God and those who keep a spurious day. And it won't be just keeping a day. Are you 7 days Adventist? It won't be just a matter of putting away your tools. Do you worship God on the Sabbath? Is it a day that you enjoy and be with Him and fellowship and sharing? The touch of His Spirit enables us to do that which we couldn't do before. Have you ever wondered why we could spread all of our literature over every part of the continent and still nothing would happen? Timing of events is so important in God's work. Always has been, always will be. Now, we will have the power. Such power that they haven't seen since apostolic times. And one of the major side effects of that power, as we go to the people, the power attending the message, Ellen White writes, will only madden those who oppose it. Angry! And the opposition will do everything to keep it from being discussed. And suddenly, every news media known will blazon the issues. We will get prime time, I promise you. NBC, ABC, and CBS will carry it live. Whether you like it or you don't like it, it'll be carried. It may be embarrassing to some people, but it'll be carried because it'll be a hot news item. Because the news people love conflict. They love that. They thirst for it. They're hungry for news. If someone is living a decent life, that's no news item, but they get conflict and they're in business. And so in this corner you have the Sunday keepers. In this corner you have the Sabbath keepers. And let me tell you something. It'll make the hot news item. And you'll be on the news. And there'll be trials. There will be things that may be a little difficult for us in the days ahead, because I read, as the question of enforcing Sunday observance is widely agitated, the event so long doubted and disbelieved is seen to be approaching, and the third message will produce an effect which it could not have had before. Read Controversy 606. It couldn't have had it before. Not that we didn't do our job, but it couldn't have had it before. Now it'll have an effect. By the way, do you want to know what another side effect is of that? Not only madden the opposition, you'll see a tremendous shift in the Seventh-day Adventist Church like you can't believe. There will be a shift. As the storm approaches, a large class, not a little teeny-weeny class, a large class who have professed faith in the third angel's message but have not been sanctified through obedience to the truth, abandon their position and join the ranks of the opposition. They're already living in that environment. They're thinking those thoughts. They're already left of center. So consequently, by uniting with the world and partaking of its spirit, they have come to view matters in nearly the same light, and when the test is brought, they are prepared to choose the easy, popular side. That's what will happen to the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And there goes the end of the numbers game. There goes the end of start counting Israel. Because a lot of things will be happening. People will be coming in. People will be going out. Whole shifting going around. There won't be time to sit down and count a baptismal body count. It'll be happening so fast. And you and I will be so busy, if we're filled with the Spirit, we'll be so busy sharing that we won't have time to sit down and make some sort of a statistical report. We won't care. All we're interested in is reaching those who are eager to hear it. Now, we have a heaven to win and a hell to shun. And for those alive when Jesus comes, there will be the thrill of translation. And I firmly believe tonight, unless you die of cancer or run over by a car, you will see Him come. And what a thrill that will be. I hope you're on that side, the side of loyalty. Because if you're not... And I don't know why Adventists have somehow or another projected, especially to their young people, that the people of God are the ones that are suffering so much through the time of trouble. That's not where the suffering is. Do you know what's going to happen to those people who are in rebellion? They go through the plagues. They don't have a shelter of God. They don't have the angels by their side. They don't have anything. They'll call on these Cascade Mountains and Mount Rainier to bury them rather than face the bright eastern sky. Who is doing the suffering? We've got things kind of turned around. I used to go into classes visiting our academies and the young people. I've had these, even the fellows who would be the macho, you know, I really am scared about the time of trouble. Who got them that way? We preach a positive message. Yes, you can prepare for the time of trouble. Did you know that? You can prepare for the time of trouble. Oh, I'm not telling you it's going to be easy. Don't misunderstand me. I am saying that if you are fortified the mind with the truths of God's Word, in spite of what you may see with the eye and hear with the ear and feel emotionally, you will have enough faith to know that underneath are the everlasting arms that God is there. And you don't care. That God will be there. We must never forget that while the message of Revelation is highly symbolic, the reward of the saint and sinner is very real. I hope those passages don't disturb you. I've discovered that some Adventists have a hard time with this still, where it says the smoke of their torment goeth up forever and ever. Eternal punishment is not forever. Remember, Jonah said that he was in down there and amongst the seaweed, wrapped around his neck forever. He said, the bars of hell are about me forever. I imagine he thought so. Down there in the gastric juices, I imagine so. Sodom and Gomorrah is not burning, but it suffered eternal punishment. It's everlasting. Now is our day to prepare. The angel of God told Mrs. White, get ready, get ready, get ready. And of course, if the believers of the truth in the truth are not sustained in their faith in these comparatively easy times, and it is comparatively peaceful now, in spite of the recession, what will uphold them when the grand test comes and a decree goes forth against all those who will not worship the image of the beast, receive his mark in their forehead and their hands? What will happen then? If you're going to get shaken out by somebody like Walter Ray or Dr. Ford or something like that, if you're going to get shaken out then, now, what's going to happen when the pressure's on? I don't care who comes up, Dr. Quack Quack or Snodgrass or anybody else. I don't care who comes up in the future, and there'll always be somebody. And if that rocks your boat, let me tell you, you are probably going to get tipped over anyway. So I say to you, as the ancient prophet Amos said, prepare to meet thy God, O Israel. You have a chance, you have an opportunity, you have a wonderful time now, in a comparatively peaceful time, to know the Lord, to become acquainted with Him, so that nothing, nothing can separate you, nor height, nor depth, nor any other creature, from the love of Jesus. That's my prayer.
This has been another classic sermon from the Archive of American Christian Ministries. International Copyright 2008, all rights reserved. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministries.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There is no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.